This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now. Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Just 1 hour for you this morning here on Sports on a Sunday. Good morning. I'm Mike Kelly. James O'Sullivan is our board operator and producer this morning. Coming up, we will hear from Mike Matheny with the Mike Matheny Show this morning. And then later in the hour, we're going to hear from the general manager of the Blues, Doug Armstrong, will join us here on KMOX. Just about 6 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, as Brian mentioned, raining in Cincinnati and expected to be a game-time decision in terms of what they do with the game. We'll talk about that with Mike Matheny coming up in our next segment. But if you look at the hourly forecast in Cincinnati, it appears that it gets much better late this afternoon, about 5 o'clock. Keep this in mind, though. Of course, the Cardinals go to Chicago. Milwaukee is the next stop for the Cincinnati Reds. And so, and the Cardinals make two more trips to Cincinnati. So we'll see what they decide to do, if they will play baseball or wait and see what happens. So glad to have you with us, though, this morning here on Sports on a Sunday. Let's go through the highlights for you. For the first time this season, the Redbirds above the 500 mark after that 6-1 win in Cincinnati, leading 1-0. Greg Garcia. Yes, that Greg Garcia. Muscled up in the second inning.
Garcia hits it hard to right field. Irvin can't catch it. Nobody can. It's a home run for Garcia. That went into the third row in right field, and Greg Garcia hits his first home run of the year. 2-0 Cardinals.
The first of his career off a left-handed pitcher. His second came in the fourth.
How careful will he be with Garcia here? 2-1 pitch is hit hard to right field. It's back. It's deep. He did it again. Greg Garcia has homered for the second time in this game off of Brandon Finnegan, a two-run shot, and the Cardinals lead 4-0. Wow.
The first multi-homer game of Garcia's career. In the fifth, Tommy Pham singled after Paul DeJong grounded out. Jose Martinez came through.
Rocking the bat back and forth, the pitch to Martinez swung on. That's looped toward right field, base hit. Pham scores. Martinez takes the turn. He's going for second. Irvin's throw, safe at second base. Peraza was diving for the bag, and Jose Martinez makes it in with a hustling double. The Cardinals have a 5-0 lead.
5-0 at that point. Tucker Barnhart homered in the sixth in the bottom of the fifth for Cincinnati, but then in the sixth, Garcia doubled to right. Tommy Pham then added to the lead.
Bryce with another look, now the pitch. Pham swings, hits it hard, fair. Inside the third base bag, down the left field line into foul territory, rolling to the corner. Pham has an RBI double as Garcia touches home plate. The Cardinals have a 6-1 lead.
Miles Michaelis gets his second win. He goes 7 innings, allowing just 1 run on 4 hits. He never faced more than 4 batters in any inning. The Cardinals will try and complete the sweep today. Carlos Martinez facing Homer Bailey. Elsewhere in interleague play, it was Philadelphia over Tampa Bay 9-4. In the National League, Washington beat Colorado 6-2. Cubs come back to beat Atlanta 14-10. Milwaukee 5, the Mets 1, Pittsburgh 1, Miami nothing. It was San Diego over San Francisco 5-4 and Arizona 9, the Dodgers 1. In the American League, just 4 games played, 3 postponed. Boston beat Baltimore 10-3, Texas 6, Houston 5-10. It was the Angels winning in Kansas City in the snow 5-3, and Seattle beat Oakland 10-8. Yankees at Detroit, White Sox at Minnesota, Toronto at Cleveland, all postponed because of bad weather. The NBA playoffs got underway yesterday. Golden State rolls by San Antonio 113-92. Toronto 114, Washington 106. Philadelphia rips Miami 130-103, and it was New Orleans over Portland 97-95. And the NHL also in the playoff action. Tampa Bay beat New Jersey 5-3, Nashville 5, Colorado 4, Boston 7, Toronto 3, and San Jose 3, Anaheim 2. I'm Mike Kelly. Those are the headlines for you. 10 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're going to take a break. Mike Matheny joins us next with the SAPAW GM Country Mike Matheny Show on KMOX.
Welcome to the St. Paul GM Power Mike Matheny Show on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
10:15 in St. Louis. I'm Mike Kelly. Welcome to the Mike Matheny Show, presented by St. Paul GM Country. Second week of the show for this season. We welcome in the Cardinal manager from Cincinnati, where the Redbirds knocked off the Reds yesterday 6-1 to go to 8-7 on the season. St. Louis has won 8 consecutive games in Cincinnati. Carlos Martinez on the mound today against Homer Bailey. Or will he be on the mound today as we say good morning to Mike Matheny? How are you today, and what's the weather doing right now?
It doesn't matter. We'll play, Mike. So I don't know. I was burnt a long time ago where I had a meteorologist tell me that there was no chance we were going to play, and I shut down, and we ended up playing. And I truly did lose an edge. So I go around here telling the boys that the sun's shining and making sure that they're keeping their heads ready to play, because I do believe we will play.
They were having some fun yesterday, weren't they?
They were. I mean, this whole series, it's good to see the offense get going. You know, we've had some pretty consistently good starts from our pitching, and the bullpen has done a good job. It's just been waiting to see the explosion of this offense, and sometimes pitching or playing in a park like here in Cincinnati, the ball jumps at times. And for guys to get a hold of one and be rewarded, I mean, that's part of the negative spot of playing in St. Louis in the cold. The ball just won't go anywhere. But it's jumping here in Cincinnati, and the guys were getting the barrel on it and seeing some extra base hits, which always just breeds more confidence.
I'm going to come back to the offense in a moment. Let's begin, though, with Miles Michaelis. He was terrific, 2-0 now on the season. He goes 7 innings. He allows just one run on 4 hits. He struck out 4, walked just 2, and, Mike, he never faced more than 4 batters in any inning.
He was so efficient, and you know he got the strikeout when he needed it. But for the most part, he wasn't afraid to run balls in. He was getting pop ups. He was getting softly hit ground balls. You know, it probably wasn't until that last inning in the seventh where we saw the ball start to meet the barrel. And when you're trying to get through that lineup, any lineup for the fourth time, that's a big ask. And even though his pitch count was still low, you still have the wear of coming on the field, off the field, all your warm-ups and multiple innings like that. It does eventually get to you. So we handed it over to the bullpen, but Miles was still strong. He's a horse, and the way he does his work and prepares, he reminds me of some of those guys that you just kind of count on to eat up a whole bunch of innings for you. And as efficient as he has been, and it certainly was yesterday, you know, that's the kind of season we're seeing for him going forward.
83 pitches yesterday. Here's the thing I loved. He was spotting the ball in and out from a location standpoint, up and down in the strike zone as well, and also changing pitches. I mean, it was varying from 96 on the fastball to the off-speed stuff around 78.
Yeah, nice breaking ball, and he didn't overuse it. It is a very, very good pitch, and he was stealing strikes with it, but he had him sped up with that 96, and as you said, Mike, he was using the top of the zone, which is exactly that same release point of where that curveball is coming from. And that's how you're getting them to go ahead and chase. They start thinking about the curveball, the elevated fastball. All of a sudden, when they start to pull the trigger on, they can't stop. But then he was using a little bit of movement, too. He had the cutter going, and he would use the bottom. It was one of those days that I could see he and Yachty were just kind of toying. They weren't showing anybody the same look twice. They were able to use multiple pitches and multiple locations. And that's a lot of fun, and that's those days when you do go through the 7 innings of 83 pitches, and you're able to do even more if we needed it.
Mike Maddox had him before he went to Japan. So what has he communicated to you in terms of the way that he's changed since coming back?
A lot of it's been his release point. I mean, he was dramatically over the top. He had a little bit higher slot. And you know, I think it's just he's built confidence and being able to locate pitches more than anything else. The stuff sounded like it was always there. Once again, that higher slot created maybe some different angles, but he got down into his legs a little more. And I think he's also matured as a person. I mean, as you see him, he truly is strong through his core, and he's worked hard to make that happen. Once again, watching him work out here this morning and seeing how much effort he's putting into that core stabilization and getting that strength through his lower half. And I think that's helped him getting that velocity to be able to carry through the high pitch count. But I think it comes down to execution. Mm-hmm. You can have the best stuff in the world if you're not making quality pitches, which that's what Miles is doing now, and I don't think that's what he was probably doing as consistently when he was with Texas.
So a day off yesterday for Fowler and Carpenter, so that means Tommy Pham moves to the top of the lineup. He goes 3-for-4 with an RBI at 2 stolen bases. But, Mike, as you know, sometimes it's the little things that can help set the tone for the game. And in the very first inning, Pham tags up, he advances to third on a sac fly by Jose Martinez, then scores the first run of the game on a sacrifice fly by Marcell Ozuna.
Yeah, being able to score a run without even having to hit one of those beautiful manufactured runs. And Tommy used his instincts because he actually almost read the ball out of the outfielder's hand because the ball really wasn't hit deep enough from Jose to tag. But he read the ball, used his instincts, saw it was going to be too wide to the outfield side, and ended up being in a position to where Marcell could do his thing. And that was big for Marcell to get through and stay in the middle of the field, hit a ball to center field that Tommy could score on. But after that, it was just kind of fun watching him add on. A guy like Greg Garcia taking advantage of his opportunity yesterday.
Yeah, for just the 13th time in 264 career games, he gets the start against a left-handed pitcher. You know, we have memories of those games that are recalled for, like, the player's name, like the Sandberg game in Chicago. I mean, yesterday, the Garcia game, perhaps?
In my book, step up there against a lefty. You know, Finnegan's one of those guys that came onto the scene when he came into Kansas City almost right out of the draft with big stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily an easy call for a lefty, and trying to give Colton a day there to where he could kind of get himself together and just hoping Greg would go in and do something to help us win the game. That's the kind of player he is, whether it's something defensively, on the bases, get a bunt down, he'll do whatever he needs to do to help us win. And I don't think that we scripted it that it was going to be two home runs off a lefty.
Yeah, but solo shot to make it a 2-0 game that went 354 to right, and then in the fourth he comes up and hits a 2-run shot. Okay, so any temptation on your part to jump into the Congo line?
None. I mean, I've got as soon as they cross through and I hit them on the top step, the high five, I let them do their thing. And you know, Mike, I'm happy that they're enjoying each other and enjoying the game. There's so many of those grind days where you're just trying to put anything together and you're struggling to get anything positive going. I just have to get out of my own way sometimes with some of the old school thoughts of celebration, but it's in our dugout. The guys has nothing to do with our opposition. It's about them celebrating and making a very special moment for one of their teammates even more special. So I've got no reservation about that at all, but usually I'm up on the top step giving another set of signs, getting ready for the next hitter.
Yeah, but the first time you saw it, what went through your mind?
You know, it has kind of happened organically where, you know, it's kind of a swarm up by the top step. Now we got guys coming out on the top step and high-fiving, or they got some sort of handshake thing. I haven't even noticed it that much. I mean, I hear the noise, and yeah. I'm kind of smiling inside because, once again, this game will beat you down on a pretty consistent basis. So to see our guys celebrating for one of their teammates, that's exactly what we teach, Mike, is that, and just do what you can to make the people around you better and figure out ways to help them and celebrate when they do something well. And to see our guys do that, I mean, that's just one of those things I believe is good for the game as a whole. I think it's attractive to our young generation that's coming up. They love seeing that thing. I think our fans like seeing the energy and the excitement, you know, that many of us in previous generations didn't do so much of.
Hey, Harrison Bader got the start in right because of the day off for Fowler. Mike, he only goes 1-for-4, but I thought he put together some pretty good at-bats.
He did, and I know he was really hoping that lefty would stay in there a little bit longer because he does take really nice at-bats against left-handers. And how about the play made in right field coming in? I mean, I look over at Mabes right after that, and he just says fearless. And that's exactly how he plays the outfield. It's a fearless aggressiveness, a lot like what you see Tommy do. It's just all out all the time, which Cardinal fans, I know, that's kind of their theme of what they want to see from our players. And Harrison does that. You know, he's funny. He's got a little bit of this swag to him. But I want to tell you, and I get a lot of questions. I had a lot of questions this offseason about Harrison. But I want to tell you, this guy goes about his business the right way. And he is so respectful to his teammates and the game and how he prepares. He's tough. But he's got some of this confidence that I love. That's exactly how he should be going about it. And that's exactly what's going to make him very good for a long time.
Yeah, narrowly missed a home run to left in the second inning and one at bat. Also then followed that up a couple pitchers later, almost missed a Narrowly misses a extra base hit, ends up grounding out, and then followed with kind of the similar thing when he came back up in the fourth. But had chances, just gets one hit, and of course made the terrific defensive play. All right, so I've saved for this segment the final conversation of this segment to be about your catcher, the future Hall of Famer, who another milestone for him as he bypasses Johnny Bench in Cincinnati and moves into 13th place all time, 14,493 1/3 innings caught for Yadier Molina.
Yeah, what a I tried to explain this to some people yesterday, how just a humbling it has to be to have your name thrown in there with the greats of all times. I think about how Carp, when he hit all the doubles, and they said he just passed Stan Musial. I'm thinking, are you kidding me? To do anything better than or more than Stan Musial did. And you know, Johnny Bench, for me as a catcher, that's always been the pinnacle. I mean, that has been the guy that everybody has been measured against, and not many people come ever anywhere close to. So to watch Yadi and to be able to have had front row seats for not – I was there for his first one, that first inning that he got, and then that was unfortunate for me. And the fact that I got hurt, and I knew my end was coming in this position in this city. But also to just watch these number of years to see how he continues to improve. And it's not just a body that's out there. This is a catcher that's thriving and figuring out how to get better. And to pass one of the what is considered the greatest catcher of all times in any category, I think, is just a huge accomplishment for Yadi.
Next on the list, Ted Simmons, 15,692 1/3 innings, and then Brad Ausmus is his number 10. He's got 15,840 2/3 innings, and Yadi, if he stays healthy, could bypass that sometime midway through next season. It's 27 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm Mike Kelly. This is the Saipaw GM Country Mike Matheny Show with the Cardinals skipper. We're going to take a break. More with Mike Matheny up next on KMOX.
Back to the Saipaw GM Power Mike Matheny Show on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
Daniel ahead of Jimenez, a ball and two strikes. Chris Valleca works down the line towards the plate, coaching third base. He'll be traffic cop for Freeman, and this is a base hit from Jimenez. Daniel doesn't want that one. Two, a swing and a miss on a high fastball. He pumps the fist. In all likelihood, strikeout number 12 will be his last.
Hey, Mike Matheny, Daniel Ponce de Leon, of course, had the horrific injury, getting hit in the head a year ago. 12 strikeouts last night for Memphis. What a terrific story that is.
Yeah, Daniel's overcome a lot. I know it's one of those situations. He showed up in the spring training. We didn't know exactly what we were going to get. We had heard that you know, he'd been rehabbing and everything was clear medically from the head injury. But you just don't know how taking that time off is going to work with his stuff. But he threw the ball well in spring and is off to a good start in Memphis.
Yeah, certainly is. And speaking of getting some work, Greg Holland got some work yesterday, came in relief. I did a good job retiring three of the four batters that he faced, struck out a couple.
Yeah, he looks right. And, you know, that first day was just such an outlier for how this guy goes about it. He throws strikes, he comes at guys. I think we had him set up in a tough spot, which we thought he was a little further along than he was in his throwing program, just kind of getting the information we had from him. And we were hoping that he was able to kind of simulate a spring training, but that's really hard to do. Mm-hmm. And he's getting there, and he's getting there quickly, and we're just trying to figure out how to help them along the way.
What'd you think of the work of Hicks in the ninth inning?
Thought he was good. Probably wasn't as sharp as what we have seen. He's also really trying to figure out how much he's supposed to be throwing in the bullpen, because it's a balance. And, you know, a guy who's mostly been a starter for his young career, most of the time they're going to err on the side of overthrowing. And so I think he's starting to find that mix. He spent a lot of time talking with some of the veteran guys in the pen and trying to find his own routine of what it looks like, how much long toss, how much of a flat ground to throw. Because we know that we're going to try and use him as often as we can, but we're also going to be careful. You know, we threw him two innings, so then we had to back off. We gave him 3 days off. Whenever we throw him back-to-back days, it's going to be a couple days off. He's 21. He's got a special arm, so we're going to try and be very careful. But times like yesterday, you know, he gets his back against the wall, and he makes really good pitches when he needs to.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing I loved is, yeah, his back was against the wall with the bases, with runners on after, what, it was an error of a fielder's choice, and then a walk, but then he bounces back and wasn't fazed by the moment whatsoever.
No, gets a big strikeout and then able to get a pop-up. But you know, his stuff is that good. But it almost looked like, you know, some of those veteran pitchers we see that when he got into a bind, all of a sudden he goes, okay, I got some extra stuff for you. And that's when he got a little nastier with the sink. He saw all of a sudden the triple digits hit the board. But once again, our concern is going to be how do we really take care of this kid? And it's hard because I'm going to tell you, when you know you've got that sitting down the bullpen and he even says, hey, I feel good today, it's hard not to use him. But Mike Maggs and I have just been in constant communication, and we're treating him a little different because he's a 21-year-old kid that hasn't been through one of these seasons before.
Will Gregerson join the team in Chicago on Monday?
Yeah, we're getting Luke back, and Jed Jerko should be probably available also. So we may have some moves moving forward, but looking forward to having Luke join in. That's another guy that's mm-hmm. you know, primed to come in and close some games for us, and just adding depth to that bullpen that's as deep as we've had here in a while anyhow.
Luke Weaver goes to 2-0, 5-3 win on Friday night. He goes 6 innings, allowing 2 runs, 4 hits, struck out 7, walked just 1. Really had a lot of success with the fastball at the top of the zone, didn't he?
He did, and that's going to continue to be a theme that we're talking about until the game evolves and changes back to being able to hit that. I mean, that was the pitch we always tried to stay away from because we had so many flat bat swingers in the league and guys that could get the extension and get on top of the ball. But we also didn't have, you know, pitchers averaging 93 to 94 mile an hour, touching, you know, triple digits. That just was unheard of. And so between the increase in velocity and the launch angles, that has made the top of the zone a great spot to go to. And so guys execute like Luke, and he also gets there a little different because he gets down into his legs. You'll see his release point. Miles Michaelis is so high, everything coming down. Michael Walker, the same thing, huge downward plane. And Luke gets down into it to where it almost looks like an up shoot. And that difference in angle really throws the hitters off, and he's executing good pitches on the corners.
A little bit of fun on Thursday evening in Cincinnati, 13-4 the final, 4 home runs in the game for your team.
Yeah, just watching the guys hit not just homers, but big long ones, just you know, some of the longest that they've hit in their career. And we got some of the StatCast information, and, you know, Yachty, the longest one that's been hit by him in a number of years. And same thing with DeYoung, when we've seen him hit some monster shots, ball carrying really well for him. Jose Martinez hit a line drive that almost hurt somebody in the left field stands. I mean, those sort of things are always great to get some of that data back. It looks really good to us, but to get some of the data to show guys, listen, what you're working on right here, it's plain. So stay with the program that you're on, and just trust the fact that if you continue down this road, you're going to have a lot of success.
Michael Walker gets the win. He goes 5 innings. What were your thoughts on his performance?
Yeah, I thought you know, he was good. He kept us in it. We still haven't seen Michael really, really sharp, and I think that's a great testament. As you kind of talked about Jordan Hicks getting his back against the wall, I think one of the great tests for a starting pitcher are those 20-ish games where you don't have your great stuff, but you've got to figure out a way to stay in the game. And you know, we've seen Michael a couple times not necessarily have his fastball command. But he made other things work. He was using his changeup. He used the breaking ball well. His cutter was a big pitch until the fastball command came around. But it will come around, and when he does, it's going to be fun to watch because right now he's just competing and keeping us in the game.
Well, Mike Myers came in and did a really good job. 3 innings of relief to get the save, and behind him a couple of really good defensive plays by Ozuna and obviously Tommy Pham as well.
Yeah, Ozuna going hard. I mean, another guy that just loves to play both sides of the ball and loves to make the play like he did going into the stands and left field. And Tommy, I thought that was the first thing I said to him when he came off the field, was how that just shows the kind of player he is by not letting the score dictate the amount of effort that he's putting out there. And that was a big pitch from Mike Meyer. We were getting kind of close to being at that spot where we might need to go get somebody up to help him get through so he's not throwing too many pitches. And Tommy went after that ball. I couldn't believe the closing speed because as I watched the ball, where it was going, where Tommy was, I didn't think he would get there, and made a beautiful catch to end the game. And just his teammates, I know, have a great deal of respect for playing the game that way all the time.
Let's go back to Wednesday afternoon. Of course, the Brewers win the game by the score of 3-2, but Adam Wainwright, 7 innings pitch, he allows 8 hits, gave up a pair of home runs, strikes out 4. Afterwards, his comment was controlled counts, controlled fastball. What did you see?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Didn't think he overused the curve. He didn't really need to because he was better with the fastball. And, you know, Mike, there really weren't that many hard hit balls.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
the one home run was smashed by Perez. And the other pitch was a pretty good pitch in on Thames. He was just strong enough to barely get it over Harrison Bader's glove. And then there's a hard hit double down the third baseline. But besides that, not a lot of hard contact. And I think the line probably didn't dictate how well Adam did throw and how well he used his stuff. But that was a situation where we were really light. Sam Tuivalala was on the DL. Mm-hmm. Nobody even knew at the time. So our pen was extremely thin. We were even holding back a starter just in case we needed extra help. But Adam was able to go deep for us, and he pitched a good game. Unfortunately, we just couldn't get enough offense going.
What did you think of the job that Francisco Pena did behind the plate that day?
Yeah, unbelievable. And the day before was even more impressive. When we get into late in the game and we have to run for Yachty and bring Francisco mm-hmm. in, and that was the Greg Holland day debut mm-hmm. and some of the toughest sliders to block maybe all season. And it just shows how Francisco and Jamie Pogue have been working hard and keeping him ready, trying to simulate game situations by their bullpen work. But he comes in and also during his start puts together some good at-bats. This guy's a pro, obviously, spent a lot of time in his family with the work that his dad Tony had done with him to teach him the game and how to work and prepare. But it's a tough job, and we talk about Greg Garcia having to step in very infrequently and then contribute. But to be able to come in the middle of a game whenever something happens, maybe to your catcher, to have that backup guy stay sharp is hard to do. But Francisco did a great job when he got his opportunity.
Fowler back in the lineup today. Carpenter back in the lineup today at third base. But day off for Ozuna in left field. Bader gets the start in left field. And Greg Garcia gets the start at shortstop for Paul DeJong.
Yeah, I don't know how you'd keep him out of the lineup after a day like yesterday. So those are the things that we talk guys about is, you know, everybody's going to get their opportunity. Nothing's written in stone. Come out here and make the most of it. And trust us to put you in spots where you're going to succeed. And when the guy has a day like Greg did, we want to see that continue into the next day. And you know, we probably would have done it no matter what, but Pauly was, you can tell he's fighting himself a little bit. And he's tough, and he just missed. He had a couple nice swings yesterday, ones that didn't quite play out for him, but he's getting closer, and he's a guy that rebounds pretty quick, but sometimes a day off helps it progress a little faster.
Hey, Mike, as always, we thank you for your time. Early start today, so we will let you go, and good luck. Complete the sweep, and then safe travels to Chicago.
Sounds great, Mike. Take care. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That is the Cardinals manager, Mike Matheny, the SAPAW GM Country Mike Matheny Show here on KMOX. Speaking of Miles Michaelis, here's where his comments yesterday after the game.
Yeah, I made a few mistakes. They hit some balls hard, but we played some great defense today. I mean, Bader out there making some diving plays, and the infield kind of diving saved me some runs there in the last couple innings. So, you know, just kind of know that if I keep the ball in the zone and they put it in play, we got great defense, and just kind of let it work.
Mike Matheny pointed out that the curveball was
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good pitch to kind of keep guys honest, you know, keeps them honest on the fastball and, you know, kind of keeps their timing off because it's, you know, my slowest pitch. So it kind of keeps them off balance a little bit, and it, you know, it can let me get away with a few mistakes here and there. And then with the defense backing me up, I think, you know, it's a good recipe for success.
Miles, is the pace at which you work an indication at all of how you feel? Like, you're working quick and crisp, not just getting outs, but between pitches. Is that kind of
You know, if I'm starting to, you know, get in a groove and get on a roll, I think I want to use that momentum and, you know, just kind of keep firing them in there. And if things, you know, go awry, then. You know, it's time to kind of step off and take a breath and, you know, go back at it.
Miles, does a performance like this kind of give you, at this level, after all you've been through, coming back here, give you confidence going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every time you go out there and have a good outing, you know, it's nice to kind of put that in your back pocket and, you know, be in a really good mood for the next couple of days. And to me, a kind of item like that just makes you want to work even harder because, you know, you see what it's like when you're going to have a good game and you just want to keep having those games, and I'm going to go in between and work hard. I'll go back and look at the video and see what I didn't do well and try to clean up those mistakes and kind of just try to be more clean moving forward.
Miles Michaelis gets the win, goes to 2-0 in the season. As we told you, Yadier Molina passes Johnny Bench, moves into 13th place all time with 14,493 and one-third innings caught. Here were his comments after the game.
I mean, it's an honor first. I mean, I'm just blessed that God gave me health, and to be here for 15 years catching almost every year. So, I mean, I feel good about it.
We've talked in the past about how much innings mean to you, leading the league in innings, all that stuff. The fact that you've got almost 15,000, I mean, that kind of longevity, do you have that in mind when you started this thing?
Not really. I know. I just wanted to win games. That's the goal, bottom line. Win games, be there for your team. But when you start noticing that you on that list, I mean, that makes you special, and you want to keep going.
That is Yadier Molina after the game yesterday as the Redbirds win in Cincinnati, looking for the sweep today. Here's the lineup: Fowler leading off and playing right, Tommy Pham in center, Carpenter at third, Jose Martinez at first, Molina behind the plate, Garcia at short, Bader in left, Wong at second base, and Carlos Martinez on the mound. Doug Armstrong joins me next on Sports on a Sunday on KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln, and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Just about 11 minutes before 11 o'clock here in St. Louis, I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday. Doug Armstrong's the president of hockey operations of the St. Louis Blues, kind enough to join us this morning. How are you today?
I'm very good. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing terrific. Thank you. I appreciate your time, as always. Let's start with something positive and a couple of notes that I want to get your reaction to. First of all, sometimes we take the presence of professional athletes in our community for granted, and we tend to overlook the good things that they do in our community. Chris Thorburn and his wife made a significant donation to his son's grade school because of the work that his son's teacher, his son has autism, has done with his child. Just a thought on that and what Chris and his wife have done.
Well, that shows you a lot about Thorbs' personality away from the rink. He's he has a bigger-than-life job on the ice, and then off the ice, he's kind and considerate and really cares about his community, and I'm not surprised to hear that donation. It's not just the money. It's the time and effort mm-hmm. they put into to our community, and these guys do a lot of this stuff behind the scenes with not looking for any recognition, and we have a lot of players like that, and we're very fortunate as a community to have these guys in it.
Well, and you look at the Blues alumni, too, and they set the table for everybody in terms of the way that they should respond to different causes. I mean, they're very heavily involved in many, many charitable activities. Also, the other note I wanted to get your reaction to, Ken Hitchcock announces his retirement after 22 years as a head coach in the National Hockey League. He'll finish third all-time in victories, Doug.
Yeah, he's obviously a special coach and has a huge mark in our game. And I think that the biggest tribute you can give someone is not only was he a giant in his generation, but he's a giant all time in the coaching ranks, finishing third all time. And Ken and I are good friends. And the reality is he's retired from coaching, but he's certainly not retired from hockey.
Yeah.
Hockey's his life, his love, and his passion. He's going to find a way to be a positive influence in the game for many years to come.
Yeah. What's been your focus this week as you've tried to evaluate what didn't happen this year, the fact that you missed the playoffs, and then, of course, the bigger picture, looking forward and trying to correct things? Where have you tried to focus this week?
Well, this week was, we had our exit meeting on Tuesday. Then Mike Yeo and I spent Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday meeting together with each player. Then Friday we had a full day of coaches meetings. And now really I'm just going to use the next 10 days or 2 weeks to digest everything. We've got lots of information that we have to go over. And, I don't think we really needed the week to figure out where our season went awry. To me, it comes down into about three or four things. Our power play wasn't sufficient enough to win us games or steal us points in close games. I thought our home record was not nearly good enough if you want to be competing against the top teams, and that goes a whole host of things. I truly believe that this is a great community, and the people that come to our games, it's not a corporate based fan base. It's true fans, and we owe them to send them home with more smiles than we did this year. I just think that those are the two main things that really, really stick out to me with probably our overall special teams. And So those are things that we really have to address.
Has your level of confidence at all changed in terms of your views of your head coach, Mike Yeo?
No. I think Mike is a good coach. I think his track record shows that he's a good coach. I think some of the things that, some of the things that he and I have talked about, I think our lack of depth due to injuries this year, I think we had 350 man games missed or more. So that's pretty well four players every game that's out of the lineup. But other teams have that. But I guess the point I'm trying to make with that is that I don't think he had a lot of bullets in the chambers to pull good players off prime ice and put other players in there. We just didn't have the depth necessary, or younger players like Blaze or Tage Thompson came into the league and they survived in the league, but they weren't a bullet that he could use on the top power play unit or things like that to make a move. So I think that, our overall depth was challenged this year, and I think that Mike didn't have the opportunity to hold players to the level of accountability that we're going to have moving forward. One of the things that we have to do is just make sure that the one thing that we do control is ice time. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to do continue to do a good job or a better job at holding players accountable for that ice time.
There's a lot of things that go into every decision you make from a personnel standpoint. Do you regret not doing anything at the All-Star break?
I certainly look back on it, but then I also look back at the number of trades that were made from December 15th up until the trade deadline.
Sure.
And there wasn't a lot of movement in our league at that time. It was lack of effort or lack of phone calls or poking and prodding. But usually you don't see many mid-season trades because teams are either not giving up on their season yet or they're just going to play it out. So you see a lot of trades at the trade deadline. And the ones that were made at the deadline, we just felt we weren't in the rental market this year. Our team wasn't playing well enough, obviously, from games 33 to 62, or we just didn't have a good enough record. Would I like to implement a player or two to get us, squeeze us into the playoffs? Probably that would have been, in hindsight, if we could have done that, but I didn't really want to give up top prospects or draft picks to do it. So it was a chicken or the egg, guess, situation.
Sure.
At that time.
Yeah, and that's the way I preface it, the way that I do, because there's a variety of things that you have to consider. You made no bones about it earlier this week that your goaltender, Jake Allen, has got to become more consistent.
Yeah, he knows that. It's been 2 years now in a row that we've got to the dog days of the season, and his save percentage and it hasn't been to the level it was earlier or late in the year, and that's something we have to work with. And this is a huge year. It's a huge summer for Jake. He and his girlfriend are going to be wife this summer, are expecting a child. They're getting married this summer, but his focus has to be getting ready for next season. And I think we can do a better job supporting him, but he's going to have to come back and really level out those downward turns.
One final thought in about 30 seconds. If you had to describe or name an MVP, who was the MVP of the Blues this year?
Well, I would say from start to finish, you'd have to look at a player like Shen.
Yeah.
I would say our most dominant player when he was healthy was Schwartz.
Yeah.
Jaden Schwartz is sort of the engine right now for us. We had other players have good stretches. I thought Shen's best hockey was when Schwartz was healthy. So I think probably James Schwartz is the guy that I would pencil in as the one player that night in, night out was the engine for our team.
Hey, I appreciate your time this morning, and we look forward to what you're going to do in the offseason here.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. That is Doug Armstrong, President of Hockey Operations of the St. Louis Blues. That's going to do it for this edition of Sports on a Sunday. Thanks to James O'Sullivan, also to Mike Matheny, the Cardinal skipper, and also to Doug Armstrong. Cardinal baseball pregame coverage with Alex Ferrario after the news.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.